This is day one of the 2009 Idaho Owl Bible School. Our second period teacher is Brother Matt Norton. His general topic is the life of Lot. Today's topic is separation, Genesis 13. Brother Matt.
Well, good morning, everybody. How are we all? Do I, to you, have a strong accent? That's good. It's not tum and fol or fush and chups. That's that other country near to ours, New Zealand. I don't like being disparaging of New Zealanders in this type of forum, but if you want to hear some good gags about New Zealand, come to the men's coffee clutch later and I'll tell you all you want to know. That's fine by me. Brother Geoff, what country am I from? Australia. I'm just going to do something because this is puts you in a or me in a little bit of context for you. So I'll just do something half unusual. Just see this big rectangular open area here. That's sort of similar to the shape of Australia. Okay, just imagine that this is Australia. If I was living on this side of Australia, what's the main city over here? Okay, sorry for the geography lesson. And over here, on this side of Australia, is what city? Okay, now Sydney from us, I'm north of Sydney about 8 hours drive. And if you go 10 hours drive from Sydney, what city do you come to? Okay, you guys know it at all anyway. Okay, if this is Brisbane and this is Sydney, we're about here in a little town called Lismore. Yeah, so that's pretty good. You won't care, I know, but that's just where I'm from, just to put a bit of context. The door over there, that's probably New Zealand. No one ever uses it. That's the door they use. No, there are funnier ones than that, but I won't tell them anyway. Well, I should have brought my family, and I brought my son. You may have seen him around. His name is Todd. I couldn't bring my wife. She's rather great with child just at the moment, and she's almost due, actually, so I'm a little bit nervous because when I get home, she'll only be 3 weeks till she actually has the baby. She's not come this early before, so keep your fingers crossed for me at least for that. What else was there? My wife's name's Jodie. I had some pictures. I've lost them. I don't know where they went to. I'll show you one picture in my Bible later if anybody's interested to see the rest of my kids. I've got 5 kids and one on the way. I know, it's chaos, it's true. All right then, brothers and sisters. Well, we're going to have a look at the life of Lot this week together. And I don't know, has anybody ever heard any series on the life of Lot? I before I even looked at it, hadn't even heard a talk by a brother on the life of Lot. Not even one. And so it's not to say that these studies are special or anything, that it just makes them interesting because we've not heard them before. And you think to yourself, well, how do you get enough material for a whole set of studies? But there's bulk material on Lot. It's amazing when you think about chapters 12, 13, 14, 18 and 19 of Genesis. And then we have to reconcile, you know, Luke 17, as it was in the days of Lot, with 2 Peter, the righteous Lot. There's an awful lot of material when you think about it. So that's what we're going to look at, the days of Lot. And I've done it many times, and it's quite surprising how people have the Sunday school version of Lot in their mind. You know, Lot the faithful, Lot the faithful, he alone removed to Zoar. You know, sorry for singing. I get upset when people laugh at my singing. Although I'm used to it. I won't sing again, but we often have this picture of Lot that he was a faithful man and everything he did was right. Brothers and sisters, it is so far from that. It's not funny. He was not like that. He stands to me. He's like an anti-hero. He's the opposite to Abraham. He learnt the hard way, and he seemed he never learnt from his mistakes. He kept making these bad choices in his life all the time. And I like that about him because, for instance, let's just have a look at this. Okay. He's not in Hebrews 11. All this was in different font at home in Australia, so it's all completely changed. So I apologise if it's a little difficult to read. But you think about Lot. He's not in Hebrews 11. Sojourning in faith. Lot doesn't sojourn. He packs away his tent, sticks it in the garage. In chapter 13 of Genesis, we find Lot disrespectful to his uncle Abraham, his brother, who took him on like a son. Seem ungrateful, totally selfish, and unwilling to reconcile. This is Lot, the faithful Lot. In chapter 14, we find him weak and ungrateful. Remember when Abraham rescued him from Kedor Laomer and Amraphel, king of Shinar? Remember that? Lot goes back to Sodom. Again, after all that he'd been through. In chapter 19, we find him reluctant and still negotiating his salvation with the angel. I don't want to go to Zor, up to the hills rather. I want to go to Zor. It's only a little city. Remember that? And I believe in that moment there, he caused the death of his wife. This is Lot. He stands and Peter says he's faithful. Well, I got a big question. When was he faithful? So he stands to me in the record. Have you heard before some series on Samson? And we say that if Samson weren't in Hebrews 11, we wouldn't give Samson a hope. Have you heard that before? Samson came good at the end. Well, if 2 Peter didn't have a righteous Lot written in there, I'd never put Lot in the kingdom. And yet I don't want to be too hard on Lot. And as we go through these series, you might think I'm being a little hard on him, but just reserve judgment till we get, you know, through them towards the end. And if you disagree, at least I can shoot off home really quick and you won't have time to disagree too much. But just think about it as we try to build the picture up of Lot. He's not this faithful man always walking. So sometimes we see him walking down the main street of Sodom as a freelance prophet, barking out condemnation, getting tomatoes thrown at him everywhere, hating Lot. It wasn't like that at all. There is no way it was ever like that. And so when we expound Lot and when I'm looking at him for you, brothers and sisters, I don't want to be too hard on him because I am Lot and Lot is me. We are all expounding ourselves when we look at this man. It's just phenomenal. And I don't want to be too hard on him because that'd be like sawing off the branch on which you're sitting, almost. You see, we live in the days of Lot, I believe, most of us. And it's the challenging times ahead. And so this study is particularly relevant for us. So I hope you enjoyed. I hope we can gain some benefit for ourselves and some a little bit of faith to look forward to the challenging days ahead, brothers and sisters. Now, all right, the family context of Lot. Now, we know it. Lot was the son of Abraham's brother, Haran. Does anybody know what happened to Haran? See, when they're over in Ur of the Chaldees, Haran dies. And I believe Abraham took Lot to himself as a father. I'll be to you a father, you can be to me a son. And he looked after Lot. Now, I'm not talking about Lot was just a little baby boy. Lot was probably full grown at this stage. But I believe Abraham took him and looked after him. Nahor wouldn't do that. Nahor, does anybody know what Nahor's name means? Abraham's brother? In this awkward moment, I'm just going to have a little drink of water. Any takers? Exactly, snoring. I would do it, but it's just that this microphone is a little disconcerting just here. Nahor is always sleeping and snoring, and Abraham's trying to get him out of bed. We've got to go. I've had a vision. Let's move out of here. And Nahor's, oh, brother. It's only 11 in the morning. This is Nahor, unmotivated, unfaithful, lazy, good for nothing. Won't go anywhere. Gets to Haran, not going any further. That's Nahor. He had a problem with his father, the old man. And it wasn't until the old man, I say that in the Ephesian sense, the old man dies that Abraham is by himself, but he takes Lot again with him out of Haran. Now you can imagine that. You're my son, Lot, because Abraham's got no children. He's got no heir in his house. He wants to train Lot up to be his heir. Does anybody know anybody? Sorry for asking you questions. Well, I'm not that sorry, actually. Does anybody know what Lot means? Veiled, exactly. It means to veil. We'll come to that later in the week. I believe Lot's name, meaning to veil, actually represents for us the biggest problem in his life. The biggest problem. And at first, believe it or not, he learns it from Abraham. Abraham's not totally perfect, is he? We know that. Abraham's not always doing the right thing. He had problems, but at least he learned. At least he tried. At least he got back on track and apologized and repented and reconciled. See, Lot's a little different to that. So where does it all begin? Well, they come out of Ur, they get into Haran. They come down. Where's the first place they come to? Into the land of Canaan they come. Where's the first place that they arrive? Shechem. What's Shechem all about? Decisions. Exactly. How'd you work that one out? It's about decisions, brothers and sisters. Why is Shechem about decisions? What does the word, what does Shechem mean? I know, I'm into word meanings, I'm sorry. It means like between the shoulders here, the place where you put a burden, the burden of making a decision. It was right between Ebal and Gerizim. You know the place Shechem, don't you? Ebal was the mount of cursing and Gerizim was the mount of blessing. And at this place, in chapter 12, if you'd just like to have a quick look at that, brothers and sisters, in Genesis chapter 12, when Abraham gets to Shechem, we're told that he passes into the place to Shechem and it says the Canaanite was in the land. So what do you think Abraham's big decision is he has to make? He's got the burden now to decide of whether or not he's going to choose to be like the Canaanitish nation, to worship the Canaanitish gods, to choose cursing, or will he choose blessing? Now notice what he doesn't do here. What doesn't Abraham do in Shechem? Does anybody know this? He doesn't pitch his tent in Shechem. And I believe that's indicating that Abraham's made the decision. He's looked around, he's drawn a line in the sand, he said, I'm not going to be like them. I'm not worshipping that God. He's still got to make the proactive decision of who he's going to worship and how and what he's going to become like. And he's making this decision on behalf of Lot and all the caravan with him. And he's got a lot of people there. He's the father to all these people. What a responsibility, brothers and sisters. Abraham has to make this decision. And he draws a line in the sand. He says, we're not going to stay here. We're not going to be Canaanitish. We're not going to be like them. And he removes himself and goes to the place in verse 8 and pitches his tent between Bethel and Ai. And he still has to make this decision because Bethel, we know, is the house of God. By the way, does anyone know what it was called at this time? It wasn't Bethel at all. It was Luz, which means the almond tree. It has to do with resurrection and awaking. Abraham has the opportunity now to awake to righteousness and to choose to dwell in God's house, to serve him, or, as Ai means, ruin or destruction. And he's got to make the decision. This whole series on Lot is all about choices. And Abraham made bad choices, but he continually tried to make good ones. And Lot just kept falling, like me, into decision after decision that is bad. All the time. So Abraham comes to Bethel, and I believe this is positive because he chooses to build an altar here, like he also did at Shechem. But in verse 8 it says, he called upon the name of the Lord. Now, what does it mean to call upon the name of the Lord? Brothers and sisters, what does it mean? It's very positive. We've all done it in our life. What does it mean to call on the name of the Lord? Oh, I missed that again, so I'm really deaf. Okay, yeah, ask for guidance. I mean, that is partly true. But there's something. If you're in the New Testament and you call on the name of the Lord, what do? Baptism, Acts 20 something. What is it? Acts 22 maybe. Let's have a look there. Acts 22, look at this. It is calling on the name of the Lord for help. It is calling to him as the source of power and strength in your life. It is asking him for direction. It is praying. But brothers and sisters, this is a big moment in Abraham's life, and it's akin to baptism. In verse 16 of Acts 22, we read, when Paul is recounting his own baptism, he says that he was asked, in verse 16, "And now why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord." You call the name of the Lord upon yourself. You take away your own natural identity and you become the Lord Jesus Christ. I believe Abraham's choosing here to be Yahweh. That's the God we want to worship. I want to be like him. He probably had some ceremony in front of all his caravan there. We are worshiping this God. We're going to, like Brother Mike was talking about last night, we're going to be kind and merciful and gracious and long-suffering. And we're going to become abundant in goodness and truth. This is the way in which we're going to walk. And that's what it means, I believe, when he chose to live in Bethel, or rather to choose the way of Bethel, the house of God, to choose to be like that God. Who's witness to all of this? Lot. Lot is seeing which way in life he ought to be going. But now is where the wheels fall off the wagon. Because as soon as you say to God, "I'll serve you," what does God do? Okay, let's see if you really mean it. So Abraham goes to the cupboard. There's no food. What's going on? There's a famine in the land. So Abraham packs up his tent and he goes to sojourn, not in another area of Canaan, into Egypt. Now, is that right or wrong to have done that? It could have been right, but on what basis would it have been right? What didn't he do before he went down into Egypt? Exactly. He never called on the name of the Lord. He never asked, "What will I do?" And the pressure may have been on him. I've got to make a decision. And down he goes. And we know what happened in Egypt. And I'll race through this. We know what happened. Lot saw things. The scales fell from Lot's eyes, and his eyes were like cue balls. He saw in Egypt where sin was a sport, sex, violence, immorality, all these things Lot saw, and his eyes were opened. The money that could be made. And how do you make money in Egypt? Well, you hide the truth. "She's not my wife." It was just a little lie, wasn't it? There was nothing really big about the lie, because she really was his half-sister. But you and I know that about lies, don't we, brothers and sisters? Lies aren't so much in the exact words that we speak, rather in the intention. And you don't even have to say anything. It just could be a shrug of the shoulders, just a wink, nudge, to give people that convey the wrong idea, to tell a lie. Lot is learning things as they go down into Egypt. And he comes up out of Egypt. Well, Abraham does anyway. He gets forced out of Egypt after he treats his wife like that, puts her life in peril, all because of himself. "If you don't say that you're really good looking, Sarah, and if you don't say that you're my sister, I'm going to be in trouble and my life will be on the line. They're going to kill me." Abraham's worried about himself. What about his wife? He puts her into that situation. How do you make up for that? To make matters worse, Pharaoh just loads him up with all these goodies, maid servants, men servants, she asses, he asses, oxen, cattle. He's rich beyond belief now in Egypt. Lot sees it. This is how it's done. This has an enormous impact on Lot's psychology. I believe it does. Abraham gets his passport revoked and taken straight out of Egypt, marched out. He goes, as we'll see in a second in Genesis 13, if you just want to turn back there, please, he goes back to a place so repentant and humbled, and Lot comes back, I believe, not in the same attitude. Abraham comes back in chapter 13. Look at this. Up out of Egypt, verse 2, rich in cattle and in silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south. He comes to Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. Now, was that the first place he'd made an altar? Between Bethel and Ai? No, it wasn't. It was at Shechem. So what does it mean when it says to the place where the altar was at the first? What is it about between Bethel and Ai that it was the first? You're going to make me go overtime. It was the first time he pitched his tent, and it was the first time he called upon the name of the Lord. He goes back to this place of significance for him, and he wants to rededicate himself to the truth. He wants to get back to the way it should be. And he probably had a massive ceremony, like a memorial meeting where he presided, and he probably publicly apologized to his wife, to Lot, to all those brothers and sisters who he had led down into Egypt and taken them through that awful experience. I mean, I don't know how you make up to your wife. I mean, did he buy a box of chocolates and flowers? It would have taken months to make up, putting her in that situation. It's incredible. Plus, he's got a lot of people now that have come out of Egypt with him. They don't know anything about this God. They need direction. Abraham says, this is the God we worship. And he calls upon the name of the Lord again. And in a figure, as a metaphor, they get baptized. You understand what I'm saying? You want to be part of this caravan. We call upon the name of that God. This is how we act. All the gods of Egypt, gone. Do you see what's happening? Abraham is so upset with himself. He can't stand what he's done. But look what it says about Lot. Verse 5, and Lot also. Now, brothers and sisters, just stop there for a minute. And Lot also. What would we expect to read after that? And Lot also built an altar? No. What about and Lot also rededicated himself to the truth? No. And Lot also called upon the name of the Lord. What does it say, and Lot also did, or was attached to Lot? Look what it says. Lot also had flocks and herds and tents. What do you reckon that's saying? You know what I believe that is saying, brothers and sisters? That's saying this. You can sense it in the word, that Lot now has changed his attitude on Abraham, and you can sense this envy and competition between the cattle and the goods and the silver and the gold that Abraham has and the material blessings or possessions that Lot has. And you can see it in the record. And I believe Lot now, although he once was following these faithful steps of Abraham, he's now following the steps with the dollar signs on them to Abraham. And Abraham, the attitude from Lot, has changed from Abraham being a just man to he's just a man. He's nothing. How come he's the chosen one? What makes him so special? How come he's so rich? God hasn't made him rich. He went into Egypt. Look at his riches now. I want to be the chosen one. Can you imagine these thoughts going through Lot's mind? And Lot's starting to make a bad decision. And as we said, this is where it all goes bad, because now they've got so many riches. And the word, by the way, for very rich means exceedingly heavy. What an illustration that is. They're both weighed down with all these things they can hardly carry. And there's no room for the sheep to eat, the cattle. And the herdsmen start to strive and fight, and they're having a big biff. And it flows over to Abraham and Lot. And I believe Lot would have taken it right to Abraham's face and remonstrated with him. Who do you think you are? Your measly cattle are on my hills and my paddock. Get them off. There's no room. It's not just a little conversation. This is so bad and such an awkward situation that in the end, Abraham, even though he says, we're brethren, we can't be fighting like this. Lot says, we've got to separate. This is how sad it is. Lot agrees to separate from Abraham. Now, I just got to ask you a question. I mean, this is sad. How come Abraham, one, allowed or suggested that they separate, but two, I can't believe Lot said, yes, I will. I'm going to separate from you, uncle, brother, father. Now, can you believe that? What was he thinking? And Abraham says, you choose first. And I just think, oh, why didn't Lot fall on his face when Abraham says, you choose first? He's the older. Why didn't Lot fall on his face and say, I'm an idiot. I'm so sorry, Abraham. What was I thinking? We'll just move a little bit to the left or the right of one another. We'll stay together. I don't want to leave you. I love you. Everything I have and am is because of you. Abraham just, Lot says, yeah, I'll take first choice. And he looks down to the plain of Sodom. What does he say the plain of Sodom looked like to him? I'll just make out that you got the right answer because I can't really hear. Did you say Egypt and the Garden of Yahweh? Excellent. It's good when you always get the right answer. There's nothing worse when the speaker says, that's a stupid answer. Now, that was a good answer, sister. Now, brothers and sisters, think about this. He chooses to go down to Sodom. How come Abraham didn't say, oh, no, Lot, don't you know we're from the Mediterranean area now? And when I say choose left or right, we actually face the Mediterranean. That means it's north or south. That's what all the expositors say. He wasn't saying go east or west. Anyone traveling east in the Bible is going down to over to Babylon. It's go west, young man. You go west to serve God. You go west to worship him. You don't travel east. How come Abraham didn't say, what are you doing? Don't go down that way. Why not? Do you think his credibility was shot through? Do you think he was compromised himself? You ever felt like that? You ever seen somebody doing something wrong and you just think, I really should say something to them, but I've done that before myself and they know it. And you just feel like you can't say that. He says, looks at Abraham, says, I'm going to go down there, Abraham. And Abraham probably felt it to say something. And he says, it's just like Egypt. Who took us down to Egypt? Why would I know anything about Egypt, Abraham? So you did this. But you can see how Lot, I love the justification here. This is, I can see myself there. He says, oh yeah, it is pretty bad. It's like Egypt. We can make a lot of money down there. But it's like the Garden of Yahweh. I could really live the truth down there. The Garden of Yahweh. I believe that's justification. He's saying, I want it all. I want the world and the truth. I want everything. I can do it. I could go down there, still live the truth, still teach, still preach, still bring people in. It doesn't matter if it's a little bit like Egypt. And brothers and sisters, the choices of life, they can kill us. Lot's life is all about choices. Now just have a look at the steps of Lot's decline. We've seen these before, but just think about them. I'll put them all in there. Oh, that's too many now. Okay. First of all, you come to the truth and you're really excited about the truth. You can't be asked to do too much. I volunteer and everyone looks around and goes, you must be just newly baptized. All right? We know what it's like. Things drag on, but the day things change, and who hasn't experienced this is when there's strife. You think everybody's perfect, almost. Everybody's a righteous soul in the truth, and the day that you see your brothers and sisters fail and sin, how often does that twist you and turn you bitter against them? Lot would have looked at Abraham like he had a halo on. I don't believe in halos, by the way. But when he strove with him, And when he saw him sin, I believe everything changed. And Lot takes his eye off the truth. And it says there in verse 10, he lifted up his eyes and he looked at other things now. Not in concert with the truth. Not in harmony with the direction of Abraham. Not attached to being a pilgrim and a sojourner. And he becomes selfish. And it says in verse 11, then Lot chose him for me. I'll do things my way. And I'll do it if it suits me. Brother, could you leave this study class for us? No, it doesn't suit me. I won't be there. I've got work to do. I'm busy. Sister, would you be able to go and visit so-and-so? No, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to help them. When once something or anything was neither too hard for us, now all of a sudden happens. This is textbook Christadelphian way to leave the truth, brothers and sisters. As soon as you note that people sin and you begin to strive, and then they separate, and then Lot goes down into the valley and he's having a good time amongst all the cities of the plain, and he pitches his tent, sets the direction of his life so that when he opens up the flaps of his tent in the morning, he's looking down the barrel of Sodom. And it's like, I'm here open and ready for business. That's where he's going in life. He's taken his eyes off the truth. He's left. It doesn't matter whether you physically move into isolation, away from your meeting, brothers and sisters. I'm not talking about literal things like that. You can check out mentally, away from the things of God. And you can just be setting your life in a different direction. These are the days of Lot. And that's what he does at the end. He gave up the life of a pilgrim. He stopped searching for the city and sojourning like Abraham did for the city that God was going to build, for a house that would be founded and sure, for a house now and a city now. You know, Uncle Mike was talking about last night about the realm of God. He chose the realm of men. That's exactly what Lot chose, the realm of men. Sodom, when it comes to, like if I asked you, what is the main city, the capital city of the realm of men, what would you say? Babylon? Is that what you said? That's a good answer. I don't know what you said, but that's an excellent answer. Babylon. Do you know Sodom was the envy of Babylon? It was the envy of Babylon. Babylon aspired to be everything like Sodom. Sodom was the first of it all. Lot goes down there. What is he thinking? Look at that, the steps of his decline. How do you get a brother back from that? How do you redeem a brother from that type of decision? The choices of life, brothers and sisters. And would Lot have thought, I can't remember what's next, would Lot have thought that these small, insignificant choices that he made in life would result in war in his life? The first war of the Bible too, by the way, because of the choice that Lot made. Kidnapping, oppression ultimately, and torment, probably resisted to blood as he was persecuted by the citizens of Sodom when we get to chapter 19. Right down the end, the loss of all his material wealth, loss of his family, his children, his sons-in-law, his daughters-in-law, his wife, and ultimately we know where he ends up, shame in his family. Can we foresee those little incremental changes that we make in life? I know of a brother. He decided he's going to make a choice, just a little change. He's going to do a course. I don't care about courses. There's nothing wrong with doing a course. But the problem with this course was it was a couple of hours from home. And he had to go 3 days a week. But what he decided was, because everybody's a little bit worried, as you do for your brothers. He's a little bit worried. He says, well, we're not moving. There's no way we're going to move. Dogmatism. The truth. The kids need the truth here in the ecclesia. So what I'll do is I'll travel down one day and I'll stay overnight, one night a week, and I'll come back on the third day. And that'll be insignificant. No one will even notice me. That's how I'm going to do it for 2 years. 3 months has gone past. You know what they decide? It's too far to drive. And I've made the choice. I've got to stick with it now. He's chained by his choice that he's now made. It's got him as a captive. So they decide to move. They uproot the whole... But you said you weren't going to... Things change. Uproot the whole family away from Sunday school, away from the meeting, and they go down to this other city. And in that other city, the daughters make other friends outside. There's nothing wrong with other friends outside, yet they weren't inviting them back to the ecclesial hall. They weren't attending Sunday school. When they came home to visit, they felt awkward coming to the meeting because they just had such an engaging time now in their new place. And we're only moving just until I finish the course. This is a true story. At the end of 2 years, when the course was finished, the word was, we're never coming back home. I look at stories like that, and you might know a lot of them too. And you can see them so clearly. This is the life of Lot. Little, tiny changes, incrementally over a long period of time, which ultimately have a massive effect on somebody's life. And you can't rewind it. You can make a choice to go in the opposite direction again, but you've got to live with the scars and the consequences of the choices you've already made. Does that make sense? But this is true. And this brother's family is in all sorts of trouble now because of the choices that Dad made. Yeah, Mum wanted to go too. Not at first, of course, but it's amazing how things change. You've heard of the 2 degrees of difference? Has anyone heard of the 2 degrees of difference? You haven't? Oh, well, I just reminded myself of a story. I'll tell you a story about 2 degrees of difference. This guy's on the plane going somewhere and he's punching onto his laptop and the plane gets grounded and he doesn't want to talk to anybody, as you do on a plane, so he just keeps punching away at his laptop and they're not going anywhere for about an hour. Ultimately, laptop battery just goes, it dies. So he's sitting there twiddling his thumbs, not wanting to talk. But in the end, it's hot and sweaty, and you end up talking to anybody. So he turns to the guy next to him. How are you going? Yeah, oh, can you believe it? We're grounded. He says, yeah, can you believe it? Can't believe it. I want to get to the place where I'm going. What do? I do this. And he finds out the guy sitting next to him is an engineer. Not just any engineer. He works for NASA. And not just any engineer in NASA. He finds out that this guy was actually in the launch room when Apollo 13 went AWOL. And he can't believe it. He says, you're serious? And he says, yeah, that's really true. I could try and put on my American voice, but I can't. He says, like, did they really say, you know, Houston, we have a problem? He said, yeah, everyone asked me that. They really said it and everything. And he said, well, that's just crazy, because I know it was pretty close, you know. You had to, like, you only get one chance. He said, we only got one chance to shoot it back to Earth. Just one. And the guy said ignorantly, well, it wouldn't have mattered if you were like 1 or 2 degrees off, wouldn't it? And the guy nearly spat blood. 2 degrees, 2 degrees. And he reached into his bag, pulled out his, you know, his Casio rocket-fueled calculator and started banging the buttons really hard. 2 degrees. If we were 2 degrees off at Bern at that distance, and, you know, I'm not messing with numbers here, but as far away as they were from the Earth, at 2 degrees... At Bern, if they were 2 degrees off, they would have missed the Earth by 11,000 miles. And he said it had to be absolutely accurate. Now, brothers and sisters, that to me just becomes a classic metaphor for the choices of life. We just make these tiny little degree incremental changes in our life, just small ones, miss a meeting here or there. Just make a decision not to do the readings with the kids. Make a decision not to pray with our wives. In all these areas, I have failed, brothers and sisters. But if we continually make these little, tiny, imperceptible changes, in the end, we might wake up one day 11,000 miles off course, away from God, and ask ourselves, how on heck did I get here? What am I doing in life? That's if you're blessed. That's if you're lucky to even feel bad. Imagine for those brothers and sisters, which you know them, I know them, that never even ask themselves that question. How did I get to here? Well, I believe now, and I apologize for racing through it quickly, but I believe Lot is off course. I believe he's 11,000 kilometers off course. He's uncomfortable spiritually, and it's ambivalence in this story, because on one side, he hates the things of Sodom. He's content to live with the ungodly, although he didn't live ungodly himself. But there's something about this society, this culture that he loves, and he doesn't want to give it up, and nor does his wife. So just think about it, brothers and sisters, in our life, if we can draw some lesson for ourselves, think about that. The choices we make are going to have, over a period of time, progressively and surely, a massive, huge impact on yourself and ultimately on your families, on your wives and on your children. And we've got to ask ourselves, where will this choice make me end up? Am I making this choice for the truth? Or am I making this choice for me? Is it all about me? Me first, chose for me? Or will we be content to sojourn and to dwell with Father Abraham and follow in his steps? I mean, if you had a brother in your meeting, say if you had a brother in your meeting who you knew had an angel appear to him, who you knew was very rich because God had blessed him, and you looked around at your situation too, and because of your attachment to him, you were extremely rich, like you were just uber rich and filthy loaded, would you ever pick a fight with this brother? And if you ever picked a fight with this brother, would you ever separate from this brother if you knew that everything to do with the truth was bound up with him? So this is Lot's choice. And brothers and sisters, it's sad that he does. So we'll come back tomorrow and we'll have a look at a few more things.